Welcome to Talking Jimmy Stewart. I'm Tim Vanderberg, and we're going to get right into it today because I have a very special guest, Carson Green Jr., a founding board member of the Jimmy Stewart Museum, whose selfless dedication for over two decades has helped the museum get to where it is today. Mr. Green's efforts have even been recognized with the George Bailey Award, given to everyday individuals who have made significant contributions to the Jimmy Stewart Museum over the years. Mr. Green called me from the museum, and we discussed his personal encounters with Jimmy Stewart, the various celebrities who have accepted the museum's Harvey Award, meeting Presidents Kennedy, Bush, Sr. and Jr., and many more. You're about to get an enlightening history of the Jimmy Stewart Museum and a deeper understanding of Mr. Stewart's character. I hope you'll enjoy it.
I have to admit, when I visited Indiana, Pennsylvania for the first time, I was a little disappointed that everybody didn't talk like Jimmy.
Funny. I did my Jimmy Stewart impersonation one time in front of Rich Little. I won't tell you his comments.
Sometime we're going to get Rich Little in front of an audience in Indiana and have him coach everybody on how to give the proper impersonation.
Oh, that'd be great. And that was on the roast one time. Remember, did you see that roast?
Yes.
For Jimmy?
Yes.
He's trying to teach people how to do, or not Jimmy, Rich was trying to teach people how to do Jimmy. That was hilarious.
That was great.
Oh, well.
All right. Well, I will have properly introduced you in the introduction. First, Mr. Green, tell us a little bit about yourself, your history, and just what you would want people to know about you.
Well, thank you, Tim. My name is Carson Green, and I originally hail from West Virginia. I grew up in the coal fields of southern West Virginia, and in 1973, I happened to be transferred with my company I was working for to Pennsylvania, to a place called Katanning, Pennsylvania, which is on the Allegheny River. And after about 3 years there, I was transferred to a little town called Indiana, Pennsylvania. I'd never really heard of the place, but thank goodness I was transferred here because I was able to become involved in Jimmy Stewart's hometown. I had a wife of 51 years, and I had two daughters and four grandchildren. I am retired now, but I spent 33 years with American Water Works, and I spent 12 years with First Commonwealth Bank here in Indiana, Pennsylvania.
When was the first time that you heard about the idea to establish a museum?
That's a great question. Actually, we started looking at the possibility of a museum in about 1992. And it took us 3 years to get things together to form this museum or create this museum. And part of that time, we had not convinced Mr. Stewart that this was something that we wanted him to have, honoring him. And I say that in a way that Mr. Stewart was a very humble person. And when we first approached Jimmy about the museum, he said, no, I don't want a museum. I don't deserve a museum, and I don't want to really have anything to do with that. He was very, very modest, very kind, and just did not want this museum or limelight shown on him. But after we regrouped and talked about this, we realized that Indiana County had a very, very strong coal mining industry at that time. And the coal mining industry actually started failing in 1992, and miners were losing their jobs, and the economy was sort of struck by a tough time as far as the coal mining business was concerned. So we actually looked at this problem, and we again approached Jimmy and said, Jimmy, we want to respectfully ask your permission to form this museum because we think that it would really help the local economy. At that time, I was the Chamber of Commerce president here in Indiana, and we wanted to convince him that a museum would bring tourism into Indiana County. Of course, all the ancillary services would be provided, such as selling food and all different types of things that happened with the museum by bringing people into the area from outside the area and making the museum a destination. So when that was proposed to Jimmy, he became very interested. He said, well, as long as it helps Indiana, I'm willing to do that. However, I don't want to see any kind of a Taj Mahal, and I'm paraphrasing this, of course, Taj Mahal built in my honor or whatever. So we found a building here. It's the it's owned by the Indiana Borough, and we also have the Indiana County Library in this building. But we found this building, and there were rooms vacant in the building, so we decided to go to the Borough of Indiana and ask permission to renovate this into a museum. So we did that, and they gave us permission, and we went to two local banks and received a line of credit, and we used the local vocational school to do their volunteer work to do renovations on the inside, and that's how they got started. And another stipulation that Jimmy Stewart had as far as the museum was that we could not contact any of his friends. He did not want us to contact the Johnny Carsons or people like that and, you know, ask for money. He wanted us to do the fundraising without that type of presentation to his friends. So we respected that, and we did that. So over the years, we've been able to move the museum along, and this happens to be my 21st year, and I'm certainly proud. I think I did some quick calculation, and that's about a little over a quarter of my life I've been involved with this museum.
That's amazing.
So that's more or less how we got started. It was a work of faith, and God provided all we needed to get started, and here we are today.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, a lot of people may not know that Mr. Stewart had given to the community sort of in a quiet manner over the years. I know he hadn't lived there since he went to school.
Yes. Yes, I used to serve on the foundation, which is still in existence. It's the Indiana County Foundation. This was before the museum was actually started. Mr. Stewart donated $500,000 to this foundation, and his wish was that this would be kept confidential until after his death. So many people did not have any idea that he had donated this $500,000 to the community, and he did not want, you know, a lot of fanfare over it. So after his death, we did announce that we had the foundation, and many, many outstanding projects over the years have benefited from this donation, and they're still benefiting from this donation. So, yes, Jimmy was a very kind, non-assuming person. I had the honor to meet him back in 1983 when he came here for his birthday celebration, 75 years. And it's interesting how that came about. Plans were being made by a committee to bring him here for his birthday, and he was very much interested in coming. And the committee got together, and they tried to line up different places for him to visit while he was here. At that time, I was a manager of the water company here in Indiana, and we were going through a major construction project to increase the capacity of water to the community, which would hopefully make it grow. So anyway, I wrote a letter to Linda Moorbach at that time, who was chairing this committee, and I asked her if she would ask Mr. Stewart if he would like to visit the water plant. Of all places, water plant. I thought my chances were probably nil, but I wrote the letter, and Linda and others went out to visit Mr. Stewart to go over the itinerary, and I guess there were 35 or 40 different requests of places to go visit, and Mr. Stewart was going to pick out the places he wanted to visit, of course. So Linda Moorbach came back, and she saw me one day, and she said, oh, by the way, Mr. Stewart wants to visit your water plant. And I was shocked. I said, a water plant? He really does? And she said, yes. She said, he went down the list, and he saw the request from the water company. And he said, well, what is this all about? And Linda mentioned to him that, well, we were going through some renovations to increase the capacity of the water system to help the growth in Indiana and that sort of thing. And he says, I want to do that. So he was thinking about, you know, other people. So he came to the water plant, and we had a ribbon-cutting ceremony and all that. And we took a few moments to go up into one of our buildings, and we were talking about water. And he was very, very, very intelligent. He was talking about the water situation in California, how water is so important to the people in California because of the lack of water. So he said to me, he says, you know, I asked him, I said, Mr. Stewart, I just wonder, why would you want to come to our water plant? I'm just curious. We're glad you're here. We love it. And he looked at me and he said, Carson, he says, you know, water touches everyone. And then I realized that's Jimmy Stewart. He wants to help everyone. And that's why he did this, because he felt that this was a project that would help everyone in Indiana County, and he wanted to be part of that. So that's just the way that he seemed to view things.
Now, you had arranged an interview by phone with Mr. Stewart at one point.
Yes, he was. I got to meet him as the chamber president and the birthday celebration. So one day in 1988, a young lady, she was a TV reporter, and unfortunately had passed since then. Yvonne Zanos, she was an interviewer. She was up here in Indiana doing a Our Town episode for a WTAE Channel 4 ABC affiliate in Pittsburgh. So I was showing her around the community and showing her the Christmas trees and the area. And I said, you know, this is Jimmy Stewart's hometown. Oh, yes, she said, I know that. She said, you know, she said, I just love that man. She said, I wish I could interview him sometime. And why I did this, I have no idea. Probably shouldn't have, but I did it. I said, well, would you like to talk to Mr. Stewart if I can get him? And she looked at me, this professional interviewer. Oh, my goodness, yes. I said, well, let's go back to my office, and let's see what we can do. So I went back to my office, and we had a speakerphone like we're on right now. And I dialed Jimmy's home, and Gloria, his lovely wife, answered. And I said, Gloria, this is Carson Green. I'm president of the Chamber of Commerce, Indiana. And she said, oh, yes, Carson. She was very nice. How are you? And oh, she was so nice. I said, I'm fine. I said, do you think it would be possible for Mr. Stewart to talk with a TV reporter who happens to be here in my office doing a special on Indiana, Jimmy's hometown? Oh, I'm sure he would. She said, give me a few minutes, and I'll call the office, and then you call and tell me who you are, and you'll get through to him. So I'll wait, I don't know, 5 minutes. I call the office. The secretary answers. I tell her who I am. She said, just a minute, sir. So the next thing I know, I hear, hello? And I said, Mr. Stewart, this is Carson Green with the Chamber of Commerce. I met you at your birthday celebration. Oh, yeah. You know, and I have all this on recording, this conversation. But she talked to Jimmy for, I don't know, 5 minutes. And then the things he said about Indiana, he asked him, you know, the values that he always lived by, where did you get those? Did Indiana help formulate those values? And he starts talking about the values that he learned from a small town, Indiana, Pennsylvania. And anyway, he even said it's a wonderful life in Indiana, and the chills still go up my spine when I tell this story, because that was Jimmy Stewart. You could talk to him. He was just a kind, gentle person, and it was just an honor to be involved with him and his family.
So I've had the privilege of meeting two family members, Judy and Kelly. What are your impressions of them, and tell me a little bit about your encounters with them over the years?
Well, as a matter of fact, I just was on an email with Judy yesterday. Judy, Kelly, and Michael, they are just wonderful people. I mean, they're non-assuming, just like their dad. If you met them walking down the street, they would talk to you or ask you how you're doing. Not a bit snobbish or anything of that nature. And Gloria, getting back to Gloria, I was invited to a Pennsylvania broadcasters event back in 1992, I think it was. in Pittsburgh. And those of us from Indiana County were invited up to Jimmy's suite because he was receiving an award from the Pennsylvania Broadcasters. He knew we were coming, so we went to his suite, and we got to meet with him before the award presentation. It must have been 20, 25 of Indiana. And there's Gloria coming to the door. Come on in. You know, she was flamboyant and just always laughing. And there's Jimmy standing in the corner, you know, not in the corner, but just talking to people, just calm as he could be. But he invited us up, and we got a chance to be with him before the award presentation. And then we went down to the ballroom. There must be 1,000 people there. And we had our own table, and he, of course, recognized his friends from Indiana, Pennsylvania. But we didn't ask to be in his suite. He just wanted to have his friends from Indiana there with him. And I thought that was so wonderful of him to do that.
Tell us a little bit about the Harvey Award and what it's about, and then some of the people who have received that and people you've met.
Yes, the Harvey Award, that was created not long after we formed the foundation. We wanted to try to come up with some idea to honor people who worked with Jimmy in various roles, whether it be in the movies or in the military. That's another section we could talk about for a long time, his military career.
Oh, yeah.
We wanted to do something to honor people who had the same values, if you will, and had some of the same ideas. The type of people where, you know, you could relate to them based on their personality and their kindness and their generosity, as Jimmy Stewart. And it's a big event. We have a dinner, we have a presentation, and what's so nice about this, as opposed to going to an event, seeing someone maybe act or whatever on stage, these people come here, and we used to have them for a weekend or so, and we make sure that they get exposed, if you will, to the public here in Indiana. That's the way Jimmy would like it. Jimmy would not want to isolate people. So they come here. We have an event here at the museum. Usually we have an autograph session where people come in and talk to the actor or actresses, shake their hand, get pictures with them, autographs. And with no restrictions, except, you know, we have to make sure we don't aggravate. but we try to do that, which is great for the community. And people walk away from here and say, well, that June Allison, she was a nice lady. That Carol Burnett, she was nice. And I think there again, that just sort of points out that Jimmy's friends that we've invited here, who've been here, who are coming. They're very special people. And one of our first recipients was Rich Little. Some of us remember Rich. He's still working very much in Las Vegas. He does many impersonations. And he has become a wonderful friend of the museum. He's become a personal friend. And he's on our board of directors. Rich comes back every year for this event at his own expense. He doesn't charge us anything for being here. He's always willing to be part of the program because he loved Jimmy Stewart. And he has so many stories he can tell about Jimmy. We have on our board of directors another name you might recognize is Fabian Forte. He was on our board of directors for years. He received the Harvey Award. Anyway, getting back to the family, Judy and Kelly and Michael, I have to tell this story, and I don't tell it in a way to try to impress anyone, but I was talking with Judy and Kelly when they were here a couple of years ago in the car, and we were talking about Jimmy's military career and flying, and I told them that when I was growing up in Oak Hill, West Virginia, I used to work at a place called Fayette Airport in Fayetteville, West Virginia, while I was going to high school. I was working there to accumulate flying time. I'd cut the grass. I would change oil in airplanes and that sort of thing. And I was doing that to earn flying time and learning to fly. And I always loved that. I loved to fly. And so Anyway, about 2 weeks later, after they left town, this was the same year that Carol Burnett was here, that's 2 years ago. 2 weeks later, I receive a package, a brown package in the mail, and I see Kelly Stewart's name at the return address. So I open it up, and in that package, there was a picture of Jimmy and Gloria at a table at the Stork Club, and Kelly had written on the photograph, "Notice the tie clasp Dad is wearing." And also in that packet, there was a letter from Judy, Kelly, and Michael telling me that they wanted to give me this tie clasp that belonged to their father. And this tie clasp happened to be a gold propeller, airplane propeller. And since I used to fly, they thought this would be a nice little gift of appreciation for my time that I've served at the museum. And I really was touched. I opened this up, and here's this tie clasp. And they put in there, in the letter, "We looked for tie clasps. Apparently, this is the only one that Dad had, because it's the only one we could find." And I did some research on it. That was given to him by Leland Hayward. He was producer of South Pacific and Spirit of St. Louis, that sort of thing. It was given to Jimmy in 1935 when Jimmy Stewart received his pilot license as a gift from Leland Hayward. They were good friends, and Leland was a pilot also. So I have to say, when I read that, the tears did flow down my cheek that the family would be so kind to think of doing that.
Yeah, what a major honor.
Well, I like I said, I hate to even mention it. It sounds like you're sort of bragging, but I'm not. I'm just trying to give you some flavor again of this family. This
right. It shows just their kindheartedness. Do you wear it every day?
Well, every time I wear a suit, I'm retired now, so I don't wear a suit very often. But I do wear it to church and whenever I go somewhere.
Yeah. You mentioned you have some amusing stories from some of the people you've met over the years.
Yeah. I think it's good for the history to have this information because it's not going to be recreated again. Our first Harvey recipient was June Allison. She was just an outstanding lady. And so we went down to the Pittsburgh International Airport to pick her up, and we stopped by and had dinner at this restaurant overlooking the Allegheny River in Pittsburgh. Beautiful place. But anyway, we're sitting there, and June looks over at me, and she says, "Do you have a restroom here?" I said, "Yeah, I'm sure we do." And I said, "I don't know where it is, but come on, I'll take you with me. We'll find it." So I walk her out. We go out in the lobby. Sure enough, there's men and women's restroom. And she goes in there, and there's three couples there. And I noticed that the ladies were like staring at the bathroom door when June went in there. Well, then I noticed the three ladies go in the bathroom. Okay. June is in that bathroom 10 minutes. And I'm wondering, what in the world's going on? Of course, the ladies are still in there. So finally, the ladies come out. Then June comes out. And I said, "I'm sorry." I said, "Are you okay?" She said, "You know, Carson," she said, "that's the first time I've ever been asked for an autograph in a Johnny." So I said, "Well, you're in Western Pennsylvania. They love you and all this, really." But I thought that was something. Welcome to Western Pennsylvania.
We don't have any paper. We'll just use this toilet tissue if that's all right.
but those ladies are so happy. She did give the autograph to them, to each one. And then I remember Janet Lee when she was here. She was such a nice lady. And one thing that struck me about her, we were talking with her at a reception, a private reception, and we were talking about her movie, A Psycho. And I asked her, I said, "Is it true? I've heard these stories, Janet, that you will not take a shower because of the Psycho movie. You'll only take a bath." She said, "That's true." She said, "I cannot go into a shower stall anymore since that movie." And so I thought that was sort of interesting to get it from the person's mouth, all these rumors you'd heard that, yes, she was concerned about. We had Ernie Borgnine here. And Ernie was a kind, gentle person. You'd never believe it after seeing some of these movies, but he was very kind. He traveled in a mobile camper. He did not like to fly. So we were having a private reception at one of our board members' house, and sitting there talking to Ernie. And he pulled his pants leg up. He'd had surgery on his knees, I guess, and he was all sore and that sort of thing. He's talking about his surgery. And what was sort of strange about that one, it was sort of a bad time. We received threats on Ernie for some reason from some person out in Missouri or somewhere. And on that particular night that we were having the Harvey, giving it to Ernie, we had our Pennsylvania Attorney General with us as my guest, Mike Fisher. So Mike was going to be at this event, and it was interesting that we had so many police around, but nothing ever happened. It was a hoax, but that was sort of a different type of slant on the dinner, but it went very well, no problems. But that was years ago, and that was sort of a low point, but it came out.
It's very strange.
Yeah, it was really strange. And we had Shirley Jones. Shirley was very nice, too. You know, her family used to own a place called Stoney's Brewery, a beer brewery, and she was talking with us, and we're talking about the movie Cheyenne Social Club. You might remember that movie.
Mm-hmm.
That starred Jimmy Stewart and Henry Fonda, and she was in that movie, of course, with him. She was a star, and she was telling us about halfway through the movie, is when Jimmy got word of his son, Ronnie, being killed in Vietnam. And, you know, the whole cast was just devastated. And I guess they said, well, you know, we need to postpone this for a while. And Jimmy, being the trooper that he was, no, so let's continue. And they continued to make the movie. So about halfway through that movie, it's when Jimmy found out that his son had been killed in Vietnam. His son was a Marine.
Hmm.
And
yeah, I understand director Gene Kelly and co-star Hank Fonda, they would just shut down every once in a while, go fishing, just take it easy for a while.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we had Charlton Heston, he had agreed to accept the Harvey Award, and we were quite excited about that. And believe it or not, two days before he was supposed to be here, his wife became ill, and he had to cancel all of his appointments on the East Coast. So here we had this Harvey dinner ready to go, tickets sold, everything ready. We just couldn't cancel it. So I was president at that time, and I didn't know what to do. Actually, we met up here at the museum and talked about this. So Rick Santorum, who is a former U.S. senator here in Pennsylvania, was a friend of ours and of mine, and actually Rick is the one who was able to get Charlton Heston to agree to come to Indiana for this Harvey. I called Rick and told him what happened, that we had a cancellation. So anyway, Rick said, well, I will be there and read a letter from Mr. Heston to the crowd. And then I talked to Nick Clooney, who's George Clooney's father. He and Nina are, again, two wonderful friends of the museum. They've always supported us and been here when we need them. Called Nick and told him the situation. Nick says, I will be there. So he was driving up from down near Cincinnati. And so he and Nina came up. And as far as I know, that was one of the had the highest attendance of any Harvey event that we had. And Nick and Rick actually put this thing together. I'll have to jump in here now. I got to tell you a really funny story. Rosemary Clooney was here. That's Nick's sister for an event at the university. And so we asked her to come to the museum, and she came over, and we gave her a tour. But that night we had dinner at the country club, Indiana Country Club. And Rosemary's husband, Dante, was a professional dancer. He danced all over the world,
mm-hmm.
but was with her. So we had dinner at the country club, and we're getting ready to leave and walk by this room at the country club. And the ballroom dance group were practicing their ballroom dancing. Well, at this dinner was Nicolina Clooney, Rosemary, there was Rich Little was there. So we decided to stop, or actually Rich and Nick decided to stop, and we went in the room with these people. And it was so funny because Rich did one of his shows, doing impersonations of everybody. There's Nick, like the MC, and if you've ever heard Nick speak, he's quite a speaker. Then there's Dante, the professional dancer. He's dancing with all the people. And they got this special show, if you will, that night. And that was the talk of Indiana for a month, how these people stopped in and entertained them that night. I thought, there again, it's just the way that the people associated with Jimmy, how they really are. Now, can you imagine some actors today or actresses even stopping in or even looking in? But they did this.
You had mentioned Nick and Nina Clooney. They've served as ambassadors for the museum. Nick hosted a lot of events and sort of a go-to MC. Tell us a little bit more about them.
Nick and Nina started coming to the museum not too long, maybe 2003, 2004. Well, maybe earlier than that. I can't remember when they came, but they came fairly early to the museum. And as you say, Nick became our annual MC. And if you ever heard Nick, he's outstanding. But he would come and he would just spice the place up. And I'm not over exaggerating. I don't need to do that. But he would walk into the room. He knew no strangers. He had that smiling face. And Nina was the same way. And they would come in and shake hands and just sign autographs, anything that we wanted them to do. And they were just like a stalwart of this museum. They're still friends of ours. Nick doesn't travel as much as he used to. I do talk to Nick now and then, not too often, but they're just wonderful people, and I just can't say enough for the impact and influence that they've had on the museum also, along with Rich Little. He's been a stalwart to the museum.
Yeah, we should mention Rich Little is responsible for that outside facade at the museum that says the name of the museum. You can see it from the street, whereas before you might miss it because it looks like very much like a county building or a city building.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Rich financed the cover, the awning with our name on it. He and his lovely wife, who paid for it, of course. And one day he looked at it and said, you need an awning here. And then he said, well, you need also to give me a price. Send me some prices. So we did, and he agreed to that. And while we were talking one day, we were walking down the street, and here in Indiana, we have crosswalks like every other town. And I was talking to him, and I said, man, it'd be nice, if I've heard of these places where they have people's voices saying walk and don't walk for the people in the street. And he says, well, he said, I can make you a recording. I can talk like Jimmy. So as we speak today, you walk out here and get right across the street, and there's a recording. When you get right across the street, take your time now. Be careful. And it's Rich Little doing Jimmy Stewart's voice and at the crosswalks. So you get to hear Jimmy when you come to town just crossing the street. So I thought that was unique.
It's such a great idea. So you talking about the town puts me right on Philadelphia Street there. And I want listeners to know that, even without the museum, it's worth visiting Indiana. It's just such a quaint, beautiful, friendly town. You've spoken about the people there. And then there's so much history. And then even right up the street, you could go to the Stewart family home. I mean, it's very walkable. I've enjoyed my visits there immensely. So I just can't recommend enough for people to visit. I mean, if they're just going for the museum, fantastic, but I think they'll be surprised by everything else that the town has to offer.
Well, yes, it's a beautiful town. It's a typical small town. However, we have a university here, which really brings a lot to the community, and we're so proud of it. Another person that brings back a memory is Robert Wagner. Robert Wagner was here to receive the award. And a friend of mine and myself went down to the airport to pick up Mr. Wagner at Pittsburgh Airport. So we go down there, and of course we're there at the baggage claim, and we're watching. And So we're waiting on Mr. Wagner, and we wait and wait and wait. And we look around, and suddenly we're the only ones left in the airport, and we don't have a Mr. Wagner. So we called the executive director of the museum at that time, and I said, we can't find Mr. Wagner. So she said, well, let me call his wife. His wife is Jill St. John. And so she called Miss St. John, and I guess Mr. Wagner was in the hotel, in bed. So anyway, he said, well, just pick me up tomorrow. So okay, fine, that's fine. So we're driving back, and I'm talking to my partner, Carl Kaloji. Carl, what did we do wrong? We couldn't find him. He said, I don't know. I just didn't see him. So the next morning we go down to pick him up at the airport to bring him back to Indiana, and he comes out, and he was very nice, but he said, well, where were you guys? I said, well, we were here. He said, well, I had a fedora on. Did you see the fedora? I said, no, honestly. So we didn't see him at the airport. So anyway, at the dinner, Harvey dinner that night, he gets up to speak, and the first thing he says, I almost didn't make it here tonight. Carson and Carl couldn't find me. So that's where the coming off of the line. But he didn't forget that. And I thought that was something. How we missed him, I have no idea. We lost him when we got him back, but he did make a joke of it. oh my goodness.
One of the problems that I guess we're having with, you know, some of the past award winners, they're no longer with us. I mean, they're passing away. James Best was one of your Harvey Award winners. I understand he was a real joy to be with.
James Best, again, I'm sounding redundant, but he was one of the kindest, most down-to-earth persons I've ever met. You know, he was Roscoe P. Coltrane, and he was in this movie Shenandoah with Jimmy. And we took him to the radio station here, and he just was wonderful talking to the MC and all that sort of thing. And I remember him telling me about Jimmy Stewart when he was making the movie Shenandoah. He said he recalls how kind Jimmy was to him as a new actor. He said there were a couple scenes there that they did, and he said Jimmy one time came over and knelt down beside of him and said, now, you know, I would suggest you do it this way or that way or that way. But he said he was that way. And I'm not going to mention an actor's name, but there's a very, very famous actor that James Best worked with who was just the opposite. He said after a cut, you know, the actor would just walk away, not give any advice. But Jimmy was always there to sort of say, hey, if you do it like this, it might have a little different effect. You know, there's Jimmy Stewart again. It's just, but Roscoe P. Coltrane was a great guy, James Best, and unfortunately he did pass away, but he really did a nice job when he came to Indiana.
Yeah, doing some research on him, because I was hoping to be able to speak with him at some point, and as you said, he passed away in recent years, or last couple of years. He must have passed along that work ethic that he got from Jimmy to other actors, because people said that about him, that he was an actor's actor. He took time to help people. I think it was John Schneider on the set of The Dukes of Hazzard who said that he learned more from James Best in one day than he could have learned in acting school.
Yes, he was a very caring person. I might also mention, before I forget, you know, we had Jimmy Stewart's Oscar for Philadelphia Story years ago. Family was kind enough to send it to us on loan, and we kept it here and people got to see it. But it's interesting that Philadelphia, one day I was looking at that, and I discovered that the word Philadelphia was misspelled. They left the I off the end. So as that Oscar sits today, Philadelphia was misspelled.
That's amazing.
I think I'm the one who found that. but anyway, and I, something that sort of strikes me also is you know, Philadelphia Story, the museum is on Philadelphia Street. And you know, it's like the movie Spirit of St. Louis. I remember back in 1957, that's sort of going to date me a little bit, But I remember seeing the movie Spirit of St. Louis, and of course Jimmy Stewart was in that, and I must say, looking back, I never dreamed that in 1957 I would be meeting the actor who was in that movie, Spirit of St. Louis, and so I was so blessed to be able to do that. And just a little trivia, you may have heard this story, but the daughters told us about Jimmy was making a movie, the movie Spirit of St. Louis, and if you recall, if you saw a movie, a fly got into the cockpit. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy's sort of talking to that fly, and the fly's flying around. Anyway, that was all ad-lib. That was not planned to be. That fly happened to get in there. And Jimmy ad-libbed all of that. So I thought, there again, that tells you about this man. He was just amazing, amazing person. Yeah. And I also have to mention to you, I've been so blessed being part of this museum. I've seen things I would never see. An old country boy from West Virginia would never have this opportunity to do. But in 2009, the National Aviation Hall of Fame was inducting Jimmy, along with Neil Armstrong, three other people. Arnold Palmer was one of those. But anyway, the family couldn't make the event, so they asked me as president of the museum if I would be willing to go and represent the family to receive this award that Jimmy would receive in witness his induction. So I said, sure, I'll be honored to. I never dreamed it'd be as large a thing as it was, but we went out to Ohio and went to the event, and on the first night at the president's reception or dinner, there were 10 or 11 Apollo astronauts on the stage sitting right in front of us, including Neil Armstrong and Gene Cernan. And
you had met Robert, Jim Lovell?
Jim Lovell, the whole nine yards. So anyway, but before we got there, and attended the event, I had some contact with the National Aviation Hall of Fame, and I asked them, I said, do you have an MC? And they said, no, we don't. So I suggested Nick Clooney. And they called Nick, and Nick agreed to MC, so he was our MC. And the award that Jimmy was to receive, someone had to present that to him. So I asked if Rich Little could present that to me, representing the family, and they agreed to that. So Rich came out and gave the award. But, you know, we were sitting there, and I had to read a little thing, some things about Jimmy. But people were just all the time coming up to me saying, Jimmy Stewart, I remember him in this. He did this. He was a military hero. And I was so proud and humbled and grateful to be a part of that. And there again, you know, the family was kind enough to ask me to represent them. And that's a highlight of my life, to sit beside of Neil Armstrong, for example, and meet him. And talk to the other astronauts, Buzz Aldrin. So anyway, that's something that I was so honored to do. And there again, being part of this museum had made that happen. And if I hadn't been a part of this museum, that would not have happened. And I'm just grateful.
Yeah, you've had the opportunity to represent the family well and Jimmy's legacy well over the years.
It's a blessing to be. To call these people the Stewart family friends and that sort of thing. If I could mention, getting back to the Harvey people, mm-hmm. I remember Ben Gazzara was here. Ben was quite a person, very interesting. And so I had to pick him up at the airport, went down to pick he and his wife up, and they had a little dog with them. It's a small dachshund. And his name was Maxie. And Maxie went everywhere with Ben Gazzara, everywhere. So we're driving in from Pittsburgh, getting into Murrysville, and he says, I'm hungry. I said, okay. So there was a Burger King right there. I said, is this okay? He said, yeah, sure, I just want a sandwich. So we get out, and he has a dog in this little satchel. I said, well, we'll put the windows down. No, he said, I take my dog everywhere. So we go in that Burger King, and he has his dog in there, and you know, that's probably, you don't take animals in the restaurant unless they're service animals. So anyway, we had our meal, no problem, and we left. And then when we get to the event, the Harvey Award event, we got special permission also to let his dog go with him into the dining room. And I thought that was very nice of the local people to do that. But the funny thing about this whole thing, he was in his room, and he called down. He was getting ready for the event. He called down asking if I could come up to his room. So I go up, knock on the door, and he opens the door, and here he stands in a pair of red boxer shorts. he needed something. He's watching the background, and she's laughing. She says, "Ben, you're in your shorts." He says, "Get out of here. He's a guy." But that was a funny story. I started laughing. I couldn't believe it. But he was a tall like it is type guy, and you couldn't help but love him. Of course, we had Carol Burnett here. What can I say about Carol Burnett? She was such a sweetheart. She was so kind, and I know we were having dinner, and I think you might have been there.
Yes.
We were having dinner, and people were walking up to the table where she was, and she was signing autographs. She was trying to eat, but she never complained, and she was just a sweet person. When we made the arrangements for her to, after she accepted the invitation to come to the Harvey, after making the arrangements, I suggested, Judy and Kelly are coming from, I think, California, and Rich is in Las Vegas, and Carol's in California, or where. Why can't we maybe get them all on the same plane? So they were on the same plane, and I guess it was a ball with those people on the same plane, and Carol was just so happy to renew her acquaintance with Rich Little, and it was just a wonderful time, and there again, she's an icon, and we've all watched her shows over the years, and we were so blessed, again, that she would take the time to be here. I know Jimmy would be very proud and very happy because they were very good friends.
Yeah, I got the sense that was a party plane, and they really enjoyed it. For that event, I got there, and it felt like a Twilight Zone episode because the hotel is right next door to where the conference center was, so you literally walk right out into another door, walk right in, then all of a sudden it's Hollywood glitz and glamour, and I was like, where am I? I thought I was in Indiana, Pennsylvania. I go and take a seat. I strike it up with some other media people, photographers, I believe. I'm forgetting his name, Jim.
Jim Wakefield.
Okay, so Jim takes upon himself to lead me back to the media room or to the reception room. I walk back there, and the first thing I see is, I believe it's you, other members of the museum, Carol Burnett, the Stewart daughters, Rich Little, all tugging on their ears.
Yeah, that was a wonderful picture. Yeah, I had that picture. That was great. And you know, another interesting thing about Carol Burnett, my wife Peggy, I couldn't find Peggy in that room that you're talking about.
Yeah.
This was a fall day, of course, and so I was looking for Peggy, and I looked over, and Peggy and Carol were standing there looking out that big window. Remember the windows there on that,
yes,
place? You could see of the golf course and see all the beauty of the trees. So I walked over there and sort of, introduced myself again, and they were just talking about the beauty of the earth and the beauty of the trees and the colors. So they were just talking like, isn't it nice that we live in a place like this, blah, blah, blah. I mean, here's this iconic lady taking the time to be talking with my wife, who couldn't have any influence to help her at all, about the beauty of nature and that sort of thing. So that's when you really get to know these people. As I say, when you come to our Harvey dinner, you get to meet these people one-on-one. We don't keep you away from them. We encourage you to talk with them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real loose environment. It's a real open, and I talked to Carol a little bit backstage. That was fun. I understand that she, I know when you're planning these events, you want the weather to be perfect and all of that. And then it started raining, or even rained, I think, when they were on their flight. And I'm certain you guys were concerned about that. And then you find out that she sees that as a sign of good luck. Like she can point to big events in her life where it rained. And so that completely put her at ease. And I think that sort of lent itself to a relaxing evening as well.
I think so. And I think it should be noted that in every one of these Harvey events, it seems like people are really, really considerate of these actors and actresses. By that I mean, you don't have people falling all over them. You know, I think they can sense that they're going to be nice, they're going to be kind, and you sort of treat them like, if you will, normal individuals, which they are. And I think they like that. I think many times they go to these events and they perform, and many people try to simply just get their autograph, try to get pictures, or screaming at them. But that doesn't happen with our people. We seem to be a little more down to earth, and I think they really can sense that, and they really like that, because as you probably know, I know you know, that sometimes people are always looking for contacts and that sort of thing. In our case, all you want to do is honor Jimmy Stewart and honor these people who have some of the same values that Jimmy had. And one thing I may, getting back to Spirit of St. Louis, I didn't realize this till the other night. The Spirit of St. Louis, which Jimmy was, of course, the star, it left Roosevelt Field on May the 20th, 1927. Jimmy's birthday is May the 20th, 1908. He was here in Indiana at the water plant on his birthday on May the 20th, 1983.
Oh, wow.
Does that give you a little chills?
Yeah. That's fascinating.
So I just had to throw that in. I thought that was quite a coincidence that May the 20th seems to stick out there.
Oh, yeah. Carson, there are other people that you met along the line. Kenny Rogers, Catherine Grant Crosby. There may be others that I haven't mentioned.
Right. Yeah, Kenny Rogers was here doing a concert in Indiana at the university. And he found out that, of course, this is Jimmy's home. And Kenny Rogers is an outstanding photographer. And we have a picture of Jimmy that Kenny had taken of him here in our museum. So we invite him over to the museum, and his picture, of course, Jimmy's picture is hanging here that Kenny took, and he toured the museum. We gave him a complete tour there again. I think he was impressed with the museum. I think he was impressed with some of the items we had here. He was very kind gentleman, and he was a gentleman, and we had the opportunity to talk to him about Jimmy. Of course, Kenny's still singing.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Kathy Grant Crosby, that's Bing's wife. She was in Anatomy of a Murder with Jimmy. Of course, Bing Gazzara was in that movie with him also. It's interesting, when I went down, I took her down to the airport for her departure, the lady at the ticket counter mentioned, says, didn't your daughter act in a TV program? It was Dallas. And Kathy sort of perks up, yes, that's my daughter. So there she was talking to this person she didn't know about her daughter and her acting and that sort of thing. And you could tell that Kathy was just bubbling over. And a little story. Before Kathy came, we were trying to get some confirmation that she would be here, and the number that they gave us to call was Bob Hope's wife's number. So we called Bob Hope's wife to ask if she could contact Kathy, and because they were very good friends. Kathy, I guess, spent a lot of time, I think, with her. But anyway, so she was kind enough, and we got it all worked out, and she was a sweet lady, and apparently enjoyed her stay here in Indiana.
There are a number of celebrities I'm sure you'd love to have met. Does anybody come to mind? I know, like, George Kennedy, and he was in Dallas as well, wasn't he? George Kennedy passed away recently, and he was in several films with Jimmy. Maureen O'Hara right before that. So there are a few I'm sure you've tried to reach out to over the years. Anybody come to mind?
Well, I'd like to see if Kim Novak, you know, I think she'd be an outstanding person.
Oh, yes.
To meet. I think that, you know, she would certainly draw a crowd here. She's an outstanding actress, a very beautiful lady, and I'd love to see her be willing to come to Indiana, Pennsylvania.
That would be great. You've met other notable celebrities, maybe nobody higher than the President of the United States. You met President Bush.
Yeah, I've been blessed for an old country boy from the mountains of West Virginia. I've been in the right place, I guess, at the right time many times. I met a couple of presidents. As a matter of fact, going way back, my wife and I met John F. Kennedy at our high school gym one time. He was there campaigning in the 1960, 61, and he came to our high school gymnasium and spoke, and we got to go on the floor later and talk to him. In fact, he had a little brochure with him, had a Time for Greatness, and his little brochure talked about him, and he signed it for me. And back in 1970, I had a good friend in Montgomery, West Virginia, who was an attorney, and he loved JFK, so I gave him that autograph, and I guess he still has it.
Oh, that's amazing. So when I mentioned President Bush, I'm talking about Bush 41, right?
Yeah, I've met both of them, yes.
Oh, okay.
I met both the Bushes. One was an event down in Pittsburgh. As a matter of fact, I have to be George W. Bush's county coordinator and during one of his election campaigns. But, he was... There again, nice people. Enjoyed having them or meeting them, I guess. But
yeah.
I would say honestly that the thrill of my life was meeting Jimmy Stewart and actually getting to know him somewhat and his family. One little story. I remember I asked Judy and Kelly one time, and I think this is a well-known story, but I asked him myself, I remember, I said, when you left home, you know, what really happened? How did Jimmy take that? He said, well, we were getting ready to go off to college, and I may not get this story completely correct, but I'm trying to my best to remember it, but we're going to college, and Jimmy, their dad, asked him to meet him in his den. And he went to talk to them before they left for college. And they said, oh, here we go. Dad's going to talk to us about going to college, not to have the wild parties and study and behave and all that sort of thing. We know what's coming. And I guess they were down in his den, sitting on the couch, I guess side by side. And Jimmy comes down the steps, sits down in his chair. He's looking at him. They're looking at him. And he said, Judy, Kelly, I just want to tell you one thing. I want you to always remember, be nice to everyone. And then he gets up, walks out. That's the story.
And that was all he said.
That's all he said. Can you imagine those two looking at each other? Saying, wow. Be nice to everyone. And to give you some example, when Jimmy was here for his birthday celebration, there was a dinner at the place we used to call the Omni, a big building, a Quonset Hut, actually a big building where they had dinners. There must have been 300, 400 people there at this dinner. And I was there. I was pretty close to him, pretty close to Mr. Stewart and Gloria. And people were trying to get his autograph, and he was signing them, that sort of thing, as many as he could. And then there was a young man about midway in the building. He was in a wheelchair. And people were all around him, and of course he had a piece of paper and a pencil. He was trying to work his way over to get Mr. Stewart's autograph. I saw this. I saw this in my own eyes. Mr. Stewart saw him and stopped right there, signed an autograph, and walked through the crowd, getting out of his way, walked over to this young man. I saw this. He gets down on his knee, Jimmy did, and starts talking with him. And signs his autograph. Pats him on the shoulder. and gets up and starts signing autographs again.
Oh, that's great.
He made a point to get over there to that young man who wasn't able at that time to get over to the Jimmy because of the crowd to go over and say a few words. I don't know what he said to him, but now that's a real person.
Oh, yeah.
Real.
Back to Carol Burnett's visit for a moment. I remember there was a meeting at the museum, and if people have been there, they've seen this booth from Chasen's restaurant where Jimmy and Gloria often sat, and actually sat there with their daughters. And so they actually sat in there with Carol Burnett. I believe Carol may have even visited with the Stewarts at that restaurant at one time or another. And so it's a bit of a reunion there inside, you know, this piece of history. And if I understand correctly, the girls started talking about sticking gum underneath the table. And I believe Tim Harley, the president at the time, had said, well, let's see if it's still under there. And sure enough, there's stuck gum underneath the table from in that booth inside the museum.
Well, that's pretty accurate. Let me give you the story on that one.
Yeah.
The Chasen's booth... I was there when this was unloaded in the museum. Bruce Salome, who used to be a member of the board, and I, we unloaded that Chasen's booth. And while we were unloading the booth, I put my fingers on the edge to lift it, and I felt this chewing gum. There must be five or six pieces. So I looked down, looked at it, and sure enough, there's chewing gum on there. And I said at that time, I bet that belonged to the kids, the Judy and Kelly, because who would put chewing gum? I don't think Alfred Hitchcock would put chewing gum under there. No, you would. I think he used that booth also. So anyway, so sure enough, when they came back to town after that, I pointed out that this could be your chewing gum. And they said, yeah, we remember. So so that's the story about the chewing gum. It's still on there. I'm sure if you do a DNA test, it would confirm it. That was so funny. You know, that booth has so many memories, you know. And you might know also that we have at the Indiana Jimmy Stewart Airport, we have one of Jimmy's private airplanes. It's a Beechcraft, I think, 310, twin engine.
Right.
It was some people with the airport group actually found this, and they went out and picked this old airplane up, hauled it back here, and took it apart, and they're renovated to be able to, I guess, station it somewhere right there at the airport. But this is an airplane owned by Jimmy, and as a matter of fact, Judy told me herself that she remembers that airplane. I sent her a picture of it. But anyway, so we have one of his airplanes at our Jimmy Stewart Airport out here that people, you know, one of these days can go take a look at also. But that's another thing. Jimmy, as you know, was a military hero. And that, I'm not using that word loosely. He flew 23 or 24 missions over Germany. And I mean, those were missions. You know, he was being shot at when he was flying over Germany. And he was one of those who enlisted and started out as a private, came out as a colonel. And we have, if you look at the 1945 Life magazine, I know everybody had one of those hanging around. The 1945 Life magazine, I think it's September 16th issue, this picture of Jimmy sitting on top of a building, and in the background is the old courthouse. And on that courthouse, you look at the top of it, there's a V, which meant victory. Well, the story about the V is Jimmy's father, Alex, wanted to put this V up there when Jimmy was coming back from the war to honor him and welcome him. And my understanding that the county folks said, no, we can't do that. That's not something we can do. It's a liability and all that sort of thing. Well, that was sort of challenging Alex to do it. And Alex got up through there somehow and got the V on the building without any approval at all. And then I worked at the bank in this building where this happened. And one day I was talking to one of the maintenance men, and I said, I wish we had that V. Well, he had the V. It was up in the attic of the bank. It had been cut off. It's a bank now. It's not a courthouse now.
Right.
It, it was cut off, and so I said, bank president, I said, could we have that at the museum? And today, that V is right down here with, I think, three bulbs, red, white, and blue bulbs, I think, in our museum.
That is fantastic.
We have that here, and that was funny.
So, Carson, in a word, what would you say the impact has been on the community from having the museum there?
Well, I think the impact is we have created a destination for people. We've helped, oh, you said one word, didn't you?
Oh, no, well, in a well, statement, as you would.
I think it's helped the economy. I think it's helped the economy.
Yeah.
I know it's hard to put numbers on that, but when you look at thousands of people coming through this museum who signed, the ones who signed, some don't even sign the book, there has to be some impact on the community. It just seems to me that it's like George Bailey. Let's talk about George Bailey for a second. It's a Wonderful Life. If you recall in that movie, I guess the point was, you know, it wouldn't be the same without George. You know, George realized it wouldn't be the same. So it's just like, if this museum wasn't here, it wouldn't be the same. It reminded me of George Bailey. You know, you know, it's something that you can't really put a price on. It's like a legacy. It puts this little town on the map.
Yeah, I think you could argue, you know, even to the one-on-one individual level, that people see Jimmy's legacy, they understand, they get to learn how he lived his life, and they are inspired by that, and they want to reflect that themselves.
Well, you know, it's like this, Tim. In our world today, and maybe it's been like this forever, I don't know, but in our world today, there seems to be a lot of things happening that people are very depressed, if you will, and it seems like values seem to be thrown out the door, and not to mention all the political stuff going on and all that sort of thing. And it's sort of refreshing to sit down and watch Winchester movie or watch Shenandoah or something. It's so nice to be able to watch those movies and also see the expression of values that have come out of Jimmy's acting. I mean, Jimmy was Jimmy when he was in these movies. And I think that comes across as being a real person. In today's society and world, sometimes it's hard to find or hard to find someone who is real. And Jimmy Stewart, and on all these years this museum has been open, and I say this to make a point. We've had actors and actresses who've been through all sorts of things, you know, all sorts of bad things. Jimmy Stewart has never had a blemish on his career or his life.
Yeah, it is really
21 years, as far as the museum's concerned, to find something. So, to me, if that would be an example for my kids and grandkids, what can I say?
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's not being overly emotional. That's just factual. Because it's like I tell people, you know, I'm retired now. I don't really have to I can say it like it is. Well, and I think that more people should say that we need some of the values that have been displayed through Jimmy Stewart's life. And if only one movie you ever watched to get the flavor of that would be It's a Wonderful Life, which was a failure at first, but over the years it's a classic now. And none can reproduce.
Yeah. Is that your favorite Jimmy film?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I think that it sort of appeals to older people, if you will, because I think there comes a point in one's life where you have to look back and say, you know, what impact have I had on people, and would I really be missed if I wasn't here? And I think that was a story about George Bailey, that he wasn't there, no one knew him, and then he went back to his normal life, and he realized how important it was.
Yeah.
Exist.
Well, I know that movie meant a lot to Mr. Stewart, and I often wonder, how would he proceed in his career after that when you feel like you've just done the performance of your career or you've just been through the role of a lifetime? I'm sure, you know, that was challenging.
Well, he just did the movie wasn't a success at first, and that had to be devastating because Frank Capra produced it, directed it, and that sort of thing. And it should have been a money maker. It wasn't. It appeared that it was going downhill. And at that time, it was a very bleak period during the war and that sort of thing. And for something to completely do a 180, to me, that's just amazing. And to me, that's something that was sort of meant to be. And we've all been there. We've all had those dark days. We've all had those peaks and those valleys.
Yeah, that's right.
That shows that. And that movie can apply to anyone.
Carson, what has been your most gratifying experience with the museum in the 22 years you've been there?
Okay. The most gratifying thing is to see how our iconic museum progressed from nothing, we had nothing, to what it is today, and that's an internationally known museum. And you come to our museum, you don't have to worry about having an age limitation. For example, it's not PG-14 or rated R. And I'm so proud that we have a place where people can come and enjoy all these wonderful exhibits we have, and sit there in that theater and watch film on Jimmy, and just sort of take a moment to get away from what's happening today, and maybe going back to a little better time, and which should be a basis to have better times ahead. And so I think that's why I appreciate so much, because we had nothing, and now, like I say, we are internationally known.
Yeah, you have likely encountered a lot of people from around the world. Does anything stand out? I know that Jimmy has a lot of fans in the UK because he was based there during the war. I'm certain you've met some people from England and from all over.
Right. Well, to give an example of how they love Jimmy, when Jimmy passed away, I happened to be president at that time also, we received hundreds of emails, sympathy emails. And even, as you probably know, you've been to the museum, the New York Times put a picture of Jimmy on their front page when he passed away. The New York Times doesn't do that. They don't put people's pictures on the front page very often. And if you read the article, he was a very special individual who touched a lot of people. And anytime I travel, which I don't do a whole lot anymore, people say, well, where are you from? I don't say I'm from near Pittsburgh, although I am. I say Indiana, Pennsylvania. Then they'll say to me, is that Indiana? Where's that? That's Jimmy Stewart's home. And then they perk up. I think our biggest challenge here at the museum and the future is having an educational process to make sure that we keep Jimmy's film and other his military career alive. As you can imagine, a lot of the younger people have no idea who Jimmy Stewart is, unless we tell them. So I think the museum is positioned in such a way that it can be a great influence on making sure that the younger generation, especially, have an idea of who this man was. And in my mind, you can have all the exhibits in the world, but you have to educate the people, the public, on who this man is, what he's done, and in his memory or his legacy or his values will last many, 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 many years.
Mr. Green, this was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, I hope I've enlightened you a little bit. I really appreciate you asking me to do this. I suppose that you might consider me an in-house history.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to share this because there's so many things that we know about museum and that sort of thing that would be lost if we didn't do this. And I have to give you credit for coming up with the idea. And on behalf of the museum board of directors, the staff, and all of our membership, and the Jimmy Stewart family who are aware of this, we appreciate what you do for us, Tim. And it's just a wonderful life.
Thank you to Carson Green Jr., and thank you for listening. You won't want to miss the It's a Wonderful Life Festival in Indiana, Pennsylvania, now a 6-week celebration beginning in November. Learn more at visitindianacountypa.org and visitjimmy.org for the latest news on what's happening at the museum, including our weekly matinees inside our classic-style Hollywood projection room. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, too. Your comments and likes help spread the word, so thank you very much. Bye for now.